name was Harry Cole, and I said many times after, I said, he had the right name. Cole, probably spelled it different. C-O-L-D, Cole, but he was C-O-L-E. I said, he had the right name because Harry just wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And Alvin Jones won out over him. So Pollock came back with a black, but he won it. So in 62, after Bert and I had worked together in the Maralta election, I believe it was, and the way that came about, someone out of, let's see, who was running for office at that time? I think it was a 3G ticket.
Grady Graham and
Goodman.
Yeah. Boy, now that was in.
If I'm around the right.
Was in 63.
Was that 63?
Yeah, that was 60. No. Wait a minute. No. That was 59. That was 59.
That's when I
59.
Because when Berta ran for office as a. She won as a delegate for Annapolis in 58. 58, 59, 60, 61, because she's in this, well, even 59.
Mm-hmm.
Start off as in 59, 66, 61, and then 62, she ran for the Senate. And that's when she was in delegate for 4 years. You see what happened, and there's no question about it, Victorine Adams was the first one among any of them to get really concerned and was building an organization, politically,
right.
My wife. However, we moved.
You're saying the first black, real yeah, black organization?
Yes, as far as the women were concerned, politically.
Okay.
So, I'm talking about Democrats.
Right.
I don't know what the Republicans did in the 20s and all back then, I'm talking about in my area. When she started this Democratic Women Organization under the guidance of Laurel Randolph. We moved to where I'm living at the present time in 1949. Moved us out of the district, which we were in the 5th district. And Victorine couldn't run for office. She couldn't win in the 5th. She did finally run once in the 5th district. And she only lost by 800 votes when it was nearly impossible out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the same time. She ran the same time in Berta. In 60, she ran for the House of Delegates in the 5th district, 1962.
Mm-hmm.
62, when Berta ran for the Senate. But if had we stayed in the 4th district, had not been out of the 4th district, I'm positive Victorine Adams would have been the first black woman elected to office in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Being in the 5th district was pretty good. Because Berta didn't get involved in politics until some time just before she decided to run. Not really. And that was the late 50s. But we did work together. The question was,
why did you all split?
Why did we split? Well, when Berta ran for the House of Delegates, I was not with Berta
mm-hmm.
at all. Had nothing to do with her election. Sam Daniels was her campaign manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know Sam Daniels?
I know who you mean,
yeah. Yeah, Temple. And head of Siebel. Sam was a camp, was a, and that was the time when Harry Cole, that would be the same, let's see, would that be the same, she in the House of Delegates when Harry Cole was senator, would be the same time. Harry was 4 years before her. She went into the House of Delegates, I guess, at the same time as Alvin Jones went into the Senate, that's right.
Yeah.
That would be it. And Alvin, because he was in there 4 years, and Berta went in. So she, Harry Cole went in. It was two Coles went in. You know, when Harry Cole was elected, one other black guy named Cole was elected to the House of Delegates.
Just because of the name.
Because
yeah.
of the name, the two
yeah.
went in. That was the two. And then Shula Hatchett or someone went in that time. But however, during the 3G, which was, you said
1959.
Someone asked my organization, and Berta had some type of organization called the Valiant Women or something she formed, to work together. So we worked together for the 3G ticket. And from that we started organize the 4th District organization. And I had control of the 4th District organization. Probably still could have controlled the 4th District organization. But after Verda became senator, my God, she wanted to be the boss. She wanted to be everything.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the beginning of 62. Well, after 4 years of Verda, we just couldn't take it. I said, myself, Henry Parks, and a few others, they'd been beating on me that they just wouldn't go on no further if I didn't do something. And I think we stayed there until the next election, and either just before the next election, sometime, we split. In 69, I guess, 68, we started what we call the Metro Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
The one that friends the Metro Democrats and 4th District Democrats, or whatever you call them now. That's the two organizations. It's been split ever since. But it was, in my opinion, and many other people's opinion, was impossible to work with Verda because she's just all over the place and all over everything. And that was just Verda.
Right. Well, perhaps it would be good to ask you, too, about the mayoralty primary in 1971, when George Russell looked like he had a chance to become the first black mayor of the city of Baltimore, and he was running against Schaefer, and then the Mitchells, or one of the Mitchells,
Clarence Mitchell, the state senator,
decided he was going to run.
Right.
Now, would you give your interpretation of why this was done?
Now, when you say why this was done, what?
Other words, if you split the black vote,
mm-hmm.
it practically assures the nomination of the white.
Right.
All right. George Russell went into the campaign first. Isn't that correct?
I don't know. I imagine he could have. I don't know.
But, all right, but why would you say there wound up being two major black candidates?
Because there were dissension, a different opinion. The Mitchells, they didn't like George Russell.
Now, why didn't they like George Russell?
I don't know why, but it was dissension. And Clarence, for some reason, thought that he could win, I believe. And there was no way in the world. In fact, you want to know the truth of it, of course, you can say hindsight is better than, you know, always. But I was very close with George Russell. He was my lawyer. And everyone would think that I was the one that encouraged George to run. I didn't want George to run for office at all. He was a good lawyer, one of the best brains we had. And I didn't ever think he was cut out politically to run for an office. However, I was very close to him. He was the lawyer for H.D. Parks Company, which I'm a part of. And so I had to support it. I didn't like the position I was in during that campaign because I didn't think a black could win. I did not see how a black could win. Even if Mitchell had not been in there, George Russell would not have won it. He couldn't have won it. Mm-mm. No. But however, I had to support him. And I supported him, but who talked him into running was Louis Grassley. You ever heard of Lou Grassley?
Yeah, well, he was associated with George Mahoney. Now,
who was that? Lou Grassley.
Wasn't he at one time?
Oh, yeah, when George Mahoney ran for office, right?
So here you got a guy who was pushing an ultra-conservative, who was anti-civil rights, who then pushes a black. Now, would you explain this to me?
Well, Lou Grassley was very fond of Russell, and I guess we're talking about, now we're up in the 70s, and blacks naturally were winning in offices all over the country, and Lou Grassley just thought it was time, I guess, that a black could get in, and he knew that Russell was an able man. I don't think Lou Grassley ever had any prejudices as far as one way or the other politically.
He just wanted to win office,
He wanted to win office, so And at that time, they were good friends. Irv Cobens and Lou Grasnick was always good friends, but politically they didn't see things together. And I think Lou Grasnick's motive was to try to beat Irv out over Schaefer. I mean, beat Schaefer out. Irv Cobens, he was the fundraiser for Schaefer at that time, you recall.
Yeah.
And Irv Cobens and myself were the best of friends until the day. But sometimes, making decisions politically, I go my way and he goes his way. That's the way it works. So I was, but I had to go with Jordan. See, the thing about it, most people thought that I had encouraged George to run. I didn't even meet with George before he had announced he was going to run. And he took for granted that I was going to be with him. And I had a meet with George, and I told George, I said, don't ever take me for granted. I said, I'm going to be with you, but don't you ever, George, take for granted. All the papers were coming out with the articles, Willie Adams this and George Russell this, you know. I wasn't no part of that until, naturally, I supported him and helped to raise funds for his campaign. But it was not my decision for him to run, and if Mitchell had not been in there, he would not have won, in my opinion.
You don't think so?
No.
Now, I heard a thesis presented, and I'd like your comment on it, that Clarence Mitchell ran in order to knock off George Russell's chances, because if George Russell had won, then he would have been in control of the city, and it would have ruled out a big opportunity for the Mitchells, which they would possibly have had at a later date by running and then maybe getting elected mayor and controlling the city. Is there any validity to that thesis, do you feel?
Well, I couldn't comment on that because I know nothing about it, but to me, that sounds logical.
Okay.
Because I know it's no good blood there, and it's never been any good blood there. Because George, as I understand, back when they had a lot of black young lawyers working for the NAACP, George would not he would not cooperate with Lily Jackson.
And why wouldn't he cooperate with Lily Jackson, would you say?
Well, I don't know the reason why, but he was just one lawyer that, for some reason, he...
Do you feel that many of the black businessmen and black professionals have remained aloof from the civil rights?
This thing must be, I don't think, I haven't had any money. Well, I think they have made.
Can you come a little bit closer?
Your question was, did they
do you feel that many of the black businessmen and black professionals, do you feel that many of them have remained aloof from the civil rights movement, as apparently George Russell is accused of doing?
I wouldn't say that. I think professional and the businessman have all been concerned if he's black. I wouldn't even say that George Russell has remained unaware what have you of it. But people have their way of doing things. And I think in the professional field they've made a great contribution, in the business field, as far as the black businessman is concerned, he's made a contribution. But there are people that's in these movements that's on the firing line, and they need backup. And I think these people have played their role probably in the professional, in the know-how, the businessman, in helping to finance the campaign. You can't do anything without money.
And do you feel that some black businessmen have held back from being as militant as they might like to be for fear that they would not be able to get a loan from, say, a white bank? That's a subtle question. And maybe not so easy to answer,
well,
but have you ever been conscious of that?
Well, that's a question that I can't answer except in one respect. I don't know if that would have anything to do with a black man getting a business loan. I just know, for one thing, to be a fact, that it's much harder for a black man to get a business loan even today than of other races. I know that to be a fact, because I've been involved and am still involved with both sides, whites and blacks. And I know I've had to lay more on the line than some of my associates that I've been involved with, laid on the line to go into a bank and get $100,000 or so. And I can witness to that because most of my my dealings are in joint ventures, where I've played a big role as a limited partner. And right now I'm going through an experience of bankruptcy, where my general partners went bankrupt, and some of the loans that they were able to get before going into bankruptcy through the banks. And I know my financial statement was much stronger than theirs.
Yeah.
I couldn't walk into a bank, and even though I've been doing business with banks over 35 or 40 years, and I could not walk into a bank and just sign my name like they did and borrowed money
in that amount.
$100,000. No. So and I wouldn't say that it would be because of someone being involved in the movement that they wouldn't. I think it's just one of those racial things, as far as blacks are concerned, that we still got a long ways to go to get the same treatment from the lending institutions in order to be in viable businesses as such.
In other words, you would say there's still, you still got a good ways to go, you're saying, even though many doors have been open that weren't open when you started. How did you feel, and other black businessmen feel, during the days when the young militants were rioting in various cities throughout the United States? Because even though in one way they might have been advancing some aspects of the civil rights movement or calling attention to the problems of the ghetto, nevertheless they were also destructive of property, and of course if you're a businessman and you got investments, that's property. So how did you...
Riots. With the riots, right?
I'm talking about riots, you know,
right.
Not just
okay.
Here, but elsewhere, too.
All right. That would not have been my philosophy at all. And I've said this over and over since the riots. They burnt here on Pennsylvania Avenue. And I went over to Washington, D.C. to see how they burned up and down 14th Street. And I've said time and time, I would not have approached the resentment to the extent of burning and rioting, not in the communities that the blacks did, because it was their own community where they lived.
That right they're burning down.
Yeah, where they were burning down. And my philosophy, and always would have been, if we didn't get the right treatment on Pennsylvania Avenue, use the method that we used, but in 1930-something, to picket the stores in order to get clerks in there to sell. Now, if you in 68, you're coming up 35 or 40 years, well, if progress had been made along the line, and you still didn't think, you thought you were being ripped off by the merchants in the community, just don't buy from them. And they would have to sell you the business or go out of business. And then you would have your total community. And you'd have the economics of the community going and staying right in the community. And that's always been my philosophy. The burning, no, I didn't agree with it at all, the rioting and breaking. That didn't do anything. And I think it's a disgrace that it happened, and then what happened in New York just the other day was terrible. Because more blacks got hurt. My God, there was one black operator up there with about the largest black supermarket operator. He got over half his stores burned up.
Hmm.
No, I don't know what's going to happen. So no, that would not have been my philosophy at all to do that. I think it was wrong. It wasn't the right thing to do, because I look at it strictly from the economics, and they gained nothing economically by doing that. All they had to do if they were young, and they, but you know, it takes leadership for all these things, and it just doesn't happen. You can get a hothead and go out here and do something tomorrow, you sorry. And that thing got out of hand, and it's burning, and I saw it all right out here. My God, I was right in it. And I thought it was the worst thing, ripping off all these little stores. And their stores could have been still little viable businesses in the community, which now they're nothing. You ride through the community, you still see the results of it. Except some little shaggy looking places, and dim lighted places.
Well, what do you think brought about the decline of the militants? They kind of reached a peak by 68, and then they have, many of them have disappeared. Many of their organizations you no longer hear about, such as the Black Panthers and some of the others.
Well, I think finance is the whole answer to the whole thing. You know, during the unrest there, when they started the sit-ins and all that, there were monies, grants and all, to, and then that just kept mushrooming into more money. And when you had the riots, then they really did spend a lot of money.
Who spent a lot of money?
The federal government, considering it a lot. It wasn't, probably it was crumbs in a way, but that's when they started giving blacks money to go in business, these little ones that got in, and half of them didn't know what a business was. And it's right back where it was again now, where 82 or 98% of them failed in business because they had no business background or no know-how. And so, you know, you dry the money up, that just about eliminates any activity.
Are you saying
what we have out here now? We have in the woods, it isn't safe to hardly walk on the streets at night and all. You get ripped off right in your own black community.
But you're saying that you feel that the fall of the militants was a matter of withdrawing money?
I think they weren't able to get the money that they were able to get through different organizations. Absolutely.
Well, it doesn't require money to go rioting.
No, but that was the riot. But the militants, I don't really know how to answer the question. Just my own opinion. That,
right.
It was quite a few organizations I know in the black community. And it was a lot of money available, considering a lot of money. And it's now, it's just about dried up. And I just see it from an economic standpoint that that the money's not there and you don't have those organizations anymore. I don't know how they got the money going, but they were able to get a lot of money. A lot of people contributed to it. You were going through a period there from the early 60s. I guess everybody was so much unrest, and then they had a lot of support from the other side, face it, and doing the sit-ins and all. You had a lot of kids that came over whites to go too with it. And I think then they started to withdraw from it for reasons. I don't know all the reasons, but there were reasons for them to withdraw. I imagine the leaders, some of the leaders that the kids believe in, all these people mostly young, and they believe in this thing they had going. Like you said, those different organizations, the Black Panther, and what have you, and all. And I guess it's just like you go through a generation and things happen like that, and then people become to their senses again and say, well, that isn't normal. It wasn't normal. We weren't going through normal times.
Right. Did you ever have any fights with Lily Mae Jackson on liquor outlets? I gather that she was pretty strong on zoning and liquor outlets and so on. And as you do rent facilities or have real estate where there are liquor outlets, did this ever cause any run-in with Lily Mae Jackson?
No, not because that just, it wasn't because that I was a good fundraiser. I was a very good fundraiser during the NAACP era when Lily Jackson was there.
And you helped raise money for NAACP.
I think that was one of their largest fundraisers during in the early 40s and back then. Because I had all the caravans with the envelopes there gathering money. But Ms. Lily Jackson, she was bitterly against whiskey and what have you, and they thought that those places should not be in certain areas. But there were so few black owners, so it really didn't bother too much because we were here on a commercial street. And,
mm-hmm.
and any place we had, it was already a license there, but she was bitterly against it. Well, during that period, you know, let's face it. If a white man wanted to open a place of business, he'd come and put it there, right in the neighborhood. And it wasn't right. And so Lily Jackson was against it.
So she's protecting...
She was right, trying to protect the community. So what she was doing there against places and the ones she was against, and most of the places that was operated by whites, they didn't care anything except to take the money out and take it home. They didn't give a damn about a nice place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, until I opened this place downstairs, the Little Willie's Inn, and I'm going back again, starting in 35 and on. The places that the whites had for the blacks in the black community, you didn't have a decent chair to sit in. No.
Did you ever hear
any... didn't even have black bartenders in there. You kidding? It was just a rip-off altogether.
Did you ever hear any comments about the conditions of the houses which she owned in the black community?
Oh, yes, I've heard plenty.
What kind of comments have you heard?
I heard that she was a very poor landlord, that she had all kinds of violations most of the times on her property. And
who'd you hear?
They still say that whoever takes care of properties now, they have the violations. But I don't know. That's hearsay. But you hear it. You hear it.
Right. Because if you ask the Mitchells about this, they will usually say that it's political motivation that brings them into court. But I need to get both sides of the picture for the record.
Well, I couldn't comment on it except that I hear the rumors, but I know nothing about it to be true one way or the other.
Right. Alright, when did you first meet Teddy McKeldin? He's the other person we were studying, and even though you don't know him, I'm sure, as well as Lily Mae Jackson, I'm sure your paths must have crossed.
Well, I never did really know Governor McKeldin. He was a Republican, and I was always on the other side.
You never supported McKeldin?
Yes, I supported him for mayor.
What, the first time or second time?
The second time.
Did you support
him along with the Democrats?
No. Did you support him when he ran for governor? He ran against Byrd the second time, and the first time.
Well, I'm sure when he ran against Byrd, I supported him. Yes. Now, and I don't know who was he against the second time.
The first time when he ran for governor, gosh, was that Mahoney? Then I don't know. You know, Mahoney's been the Republican Party's secret weapon.
No, but my wasn't against Mahoney. The Mahoney never did get through the primary. You see, Mahoney, now in 1951, 50, or whatever it was, Mahoney ran for governor against Lane in the primary. Mahoney,
oh, he ran against Lane the first time.
Yeah, Mulaney.
Yeah, there was a big fight between Lane and Mahoney. Lane won in a very close vote in the primary, and then McKeldin beat Lane in the general.
Yeah, that's what happened.
That was the sales tax
that
year.
That was the second year. Lane was in 4 years.
Yeah.
And after that, Mahoney ran against him in the primary. I was with Mahoney against Lane.
You were, really?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was with George Mahoney. Hell, he was downstairs. Well, I got pictures now. We came up there. No, that wasn't that time. I'm sorry about that. That was when he was with the cancer fund. And he was running the big show. I had a midnight show down at Roth Inn. We helped the cancer fund. He was head of the cancer fund in Maryland at that time. And I helped him out, Mahoney. But when he ran, I was with Mahoney in the primary. Mahoney won the popular vote and lost the electoral vote by the count as an alternate.
Right.
And then McKeldin beat Lane.
Did you support McKeldin that time, or you don't remember?
I don't know. Really.
Yeah. Have you had any personal relationship with the man at all?
No, I never had no personal relationship with McKeldin except to see him, and we did come to know each other and his law partner, Bill Adelson, had represented me several times.
You got a lot of lawyers representing you.
through Bill, I knew McKelvey. I knew him better when he was mad at last time than any time. I did support him that time.
And how do you feel about McKeldin in the area of civil rights and black-white relations?
Well, I don't know to any extent about how much McKeldin was really able to do as far as civil rights are concerned, except that McKeldin was just a good mixer. He could come to a Baptist church and he would be a Baptist. He could go to a Jewish synagogue, he'd be a Jew. He could go to a Catholic, and he'd be a Catholic.
Right.
And he was just the kind of fellow that made himself friendly with everyone. He was a hell of a good politician, I can say that. While he was mayor, I used to go out Route 40 from right here in the evening and get a quick meal out at the Hot Shot, where Heck is located on Route 40.
Yeah.
At Edmondson Village. And McKeldin would be in there just about every evening having his dinner. An autograph for the kids out there and all. So, but politically, and what he was able to accomplish as far as civil rights and all is concerned, I really don't know.
Do you know?
I cannot comment on it.
All right. Is there any white that you would cite as having done the most for civil rights in Maryland during your lifetime?
No.
All right, there's no person that you'd want to point to,
no.
McKeldin or anybody else.
No.
What about among the blacks?
It's uphill battle.